This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jimmy hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Shelly checked in to the Coco Inn in August again, just like she did last month, for the price of 2 days' wages and a walk around the...
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. That's right, everyone. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you live from the cozy creative confines of Trinidad World Recording Studios here in Fort Worth, Texas. My studio here in Fort Worth. Well, last week we had our good friend on, Blake Walker, our old Texas road manager, sharing some stories, some thoughts from the past. And guess what? It went so well. The outpouring was so large from last week. People commented, man, this guy has been there. He's been on the front lines. He got the alternator fixed in the van. Had hot opinions about you two, etc. What do we have to do but invite him back here yet this week? Yet again, Blake Walker is here. How you doing, Blake?
Wonderful. Wonderful.
What's on your mind, man? What kind of music? You been listening to any music lately? What have you been listening to?
Absolutely.
Like what? What's kind of been making the rounds on the old iPod, the Walker family iPod?
Anything
popping up regularly?
The new Kings of Leon record?
Yeah, Kings of Leon, huh?
Yes, Kings of Leon.
Did you go to the show? Have they come here to town?
It's coming this next Wednesday.
I can't believe they're playing the
AAC. Yeah, they went from playing like Gillies three, 4 years ago, and they were thanking the crowd, like, thank you so much for showing up.
Yeah, geez, thanks for coming.
Yeah, now they're going to be playing the AAC. Yeah, I'm going with a couple buddies. My buddy Philip bought me a ticket. Thanks,
What's
man.
The best show you ever saw?
Ooh. Well,
have you been to a lot? There's a lot of Pritchett shows in there.
There's a lot of Pritchett shows in there. I went through your record collection and I kind of feel ashamed because, you know, I grew up on...
You're a little younger than us,
My parents weren't into the... They were from Roy City, Texas, small town, and so...
You could recite some Billy Graham sermons.
Yeah,
But probably not get through much of the Dylan catalog.
No, my dad was into Marty Robbins. He's seen Neil Diamond and Elvis and, my mom, they liked the Temptations, and so we didn't have a lot of variety growing up. I mean, which I love all that stuff, but...
Sure.
So for me, my really experience into music was kind of throughout the end of high school and into college, and it was way into Texas country heavy.
Right.
So, I've got some, knowledge of what I like and don't like, but, I usually wait till somebody gives me something. I don't just go buy everything.
Sure. It has to become highly recommended for you to give it a shot.
But, I think the show that I had the most fun at that I vividly remember, that I really, really enjoyed was is dear to my heart because when I was at A&M in 99, the bonfire fell. And 12 students died.
Right.
Brother and I, my middle brother Brad, we were both at A&M at the time, and of course the Corps has a big part in building the bonfire.
Right, yeah.
They're usually out there building it, and some dorm guys do as well. But it fell in 99, and I thought my brother was out there, and went out there in the dark.
Oh, man, just crazy. Yeah,
there's still people under it. It was a really scary time, and a lot of people make jokes about it. A lot of T-SIPs give me a hard time, and it was a serious deal. You know, 12 people died.
There's no question about it.
It was scary, and I remember at the time the very next day they canceled class, and there was going to be like a prayer deal at the new Reed Arena, and George Bush Sr. came. They were building his library. I remember seeing him like on the front row. It wasn't election year. It wasn't anything.
Yeah.
He didn't gain anything from being there. He's there crying and holding the hands of the families that the students had died, and it was a real emotional time. And Robert Earl Keen and
our old friend Keen talked about him in the last podcast.
And Lyle Lovett.
Two Aggie greats.
There's a lot of Aggie Texas country guy, you know, Max Stalling and Roger Krieger.
That's right.
So, but Keen and Lovett are the two real, real famous ones.
And maybe the first. Were there any singers before?
We do have the great Rip Torn. He's an actor. You know Rip Torn? He always gets the DWIs.
I thought he was in Texas.
No.
He was an Aggie?
Rip Torn is a fighting Texas Aggie.
Now it all makes sense.
That's kind of our other claim
DWIs.
To fame.
DWIs.
Yeah. So not a lot of musicians, way more Texas country guys, but Keen and Lovett were, Aggies, and so Lovett probably the most famous.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Worldwide,
and so they were going to...
Yeah, so they came and played a show.
There was these posters everywhere. It said Bonfire Benefit Concert. And they were going to have
Reed
it
Arena?
At Reed Arena.
Yeah, the big basketball arena on campus.
I was a huge Keen fan, of course, from high school. Yeah. I had no idea who Lovett was at all. I knew my dad would make jokes that...
He's got crazy hair.
Yeah, he's like...
He dates that actress. What's her name?
Well, yeah. That old boy outkicked his coverage, and he's dating Julia Roberts and, all this
That's
stuff.
That's right, yeah. He's been over his head over there.
I had heard
some... And Aggie gone big time.
Yeah.
Look out.
And my parents were always like, he's got a beautiful voice and he does great stuff. And so, I was going to see Keen. And so at the time it was real emotional because they had the front row, the families of the people who had passed. And they had like 12 guys come play all day before that, or not all day, but a couple of hours. And there's a bunch of guys on stage. We got there a little late, just in time for Keen and Lovett. And they came out, and I knew every Keen, song.
I was
pumped to see Keen. I don't think I'd seen him before that. And so I'm kind of really going there for Keen. And Lovett gets up on stage with him.
Yeah.
And, they talked about what it was like to live together and go to A&M, when they were there. And just the stuff that they went through and their musical influences. And they just kind of catered to the crowd. And it was really emotional. And they didn't play Keen didn't go on and play 2 hours and then
he didn't do
on.
His show.
No.
Yeah.
They both stood up together, merged their bands together, and they traded off songs.
Yeah.
And it was
that's cool. I didn't know that.
Awesome.
I knew they played. I bet that was really neat.
It was real emotional and it was real.
And talk about a real unique. They're just up there as Aggies, as fellow Aggies, and not like you say playing by a script, playing their shows. They were just. It was just a completely unique show, once in a lifetime thing that they're going to get up and just kind of do something like this. Once in a lifetime occasion. That's pretty cool, man. I didn't know that's how that show went down. I knew they'd play.
It stands out to me as because it was emotional for people. Where people are tearing up, and they played some slow stuff and some of their big radio hits, and they just traded off. And they were could tell that they were just best friends when they lived together at A&M. That they were just close.
Yeah.
They just gave each other a hard time and traded off songs and played on each other's songs, and it was just amazing. They played for hours. And just they took requests and they played covers and they just went through.
Was the stage at one end of the arena or right in the middle, or how did they have it set up?
It was on one end of the arena, but the place was packed. I mean, it was packed.
Yeah.
And I didn't have awesome seats or anything. I was in the upper deck, pretty far away, but the sound was great. And we sat through it, and I really remember that standing out. It was so cool to be a part of that.
And I
remember just thinking, man, that'll never ever take place again.
That's right.
There's
that's
no way you'll
unique.
Ever. Those guys maybe every now and then hop on the stage and because they're friends.
Yeah.
But just a whole show where neither one of them took a dime. They gave all the proceeds to the 12
Foundation,
students that died,
mm-hmm.
Their families, and man, it was a real emotional time. I was just out from home.
A unique musical experience, too, for sure.
Yeah, finally got out of the house, kind of
It is hard
up.
For me when I go to these big shows. They roll through town, and, with the lights, how they are on these big shows, they've got them programmed and computers. I had these green lasers shoot on at the end of this song and stuff. The artist, the bigger the shows get, the artist is less likely. We talked about the stripped down shows of maybe like a Springsteen or somebody. Now he can start pulling stuff out of the crowd and stuff and playing, and that makes it. That's what makes it endearing and unique. But these big kind of shows, the artist does have to stick to a schedule. You do have to have a set list. You can't just get up there and start pulling stuff out of the air like we do. we never have a set list, But that's really cool. Then that Lyle and Robert would sit there and just kind of. Maybe just you get the impression just right before they went on. Hey, what are we gonna do? Man, let's do some of the old stuff. And hey, do you know this? I know this one of yours, and you know that one. Remember that one that goes dun dun dun? Okay, yeah. I'll, you sing that one, and They just kind of go up there and make it happen.
And they're both just
so unique.
They're both amazing artists. But, I mean, Lovett travels with, you know, he's got a horn section.
Oh, yeah,
and he's
yeah.
got pianos. And I mean, sure. a Lovett show is normally, there's a ton of people back there with mm-hmm. him. Well, he didn't really have that many people with him. And it was real keen. It was Keen's guys, if I can remember, and some of Lovett's. And there wasn't a lot of horns and, you know, other instruments out there. It was really a lot of acoustic and intimate stuff. But man, it just blew me away, and I remember thinking, you know, because that was unique. But I'd have to say, for my other favorite show that I can recall,
and what else is up there?
You probably
what else is up there?
You will dismiss this immediately, but
Creed.
No, Lord, no. I saw Weezer at Nokia.
Well, you're a huge Weezer fan.
I'm a big Weezer guy. Also, in high school, when you're kind of figuring out who you are, and you know, I don't have
right.
enough friends, or I don't look good enough, or whatever.
Yeah, I'm just looking at girly magazines and eating pizza. You know.
The Blue album came out, that
yeah.
first Weezer
oh, yeah.
record, and everyone owned it,
My
and it
name
was
is Jonas.
Yeah, it just everything on it what hit radio play and made
yeah.
him famous. But I mean, that
it
album
struck a chord with you.
That album just kind of as you're growing
you're
and
like,
growing
who
up.
Who are these guys? You just You're like, I don't know. I'm intrigued by this music. You see the album cover, just some pudgy dudes, just dorky, just pimpled
oh,
face
yeah.
with glasses. You're
glasses.
Like, dude, this is my band.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
If it had been some dude with, like, real ripped abs and big biceps, you'd be like, I like this. This,
yeah.
this isn't my guy.
Like, they're just
this
so.
This isn't my guy.
They don't want to impress anyone. You
yeah.
know, Rivers Cuomo is just, to me, a genius. But that album was one of the only albums I've ever purchased, and from front to back, every song, loved it, enjoyed
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
You just keep listening to it
right.
over and over again, and never
so,
gets
and so you like their shows, of course. I mean, yeah.
Well, they were also
this the last one at Nokia.
Yeah,
where they pulled the kid on stage.
Oh yeah, no, I'm getting to that.
Oh
yeah,
sorry,
yeah.
okay,
no,
that's
it's okay. but see, when I the first concert I ever went to
uh-huh.
was Weezer Live. Ash opened for them. This great band
yeah.
from England that in 1977 was their album, and they were awesome live. But Ash opened for Weezer at Deep Elm Live.
Uh-huh.
I was a sophomore in high school, and my brother took me, and there was a mosh pit, and it was awesome.
Wow.
And so
yeah.
I remember that was my first show, and so that was like everything after that was like, man, they always held a special place in my heart. And so I've seen them several times. And then when I went to this show, you know, they finally got enough music out there that they can play a good 2-hour set and play all hits.
Yeah.
And they don't worry about the new stuff. And some of the new stuff's great. So they don't beat you down with just the new album. And they're all real good musicians. So they switch places constantly.
Right.
Like Rivers will go play the drums and the
yeah.
drummer will come up and sing. And they'll all switch instruments and they have a great live show. And they have, you know,
very
stupid.
Very fan centric. Very
like
involved.
Rivers.
Everyone's in on the joke. Yeah.
Rivers wore like he grew out a mustache.
Yeah.
Because he just had his first child, and he said he could recall when he was a child every picture he ever had with his father
mm-hmm.
in black and white. His dad had this big old mustache.
So he wanted to be a proper dad.
Yeah. So Rivers. Rivers.
I like it.
He grew out a mustache.
Yeah.
For his first child, I think it was a little girl, and so. He just played to it perfectly. He would wear like he had like a mullet cut
mm-hmm.
and a mustache and like they had jumpsuits on when they
yeah.
came out, and they would like do stupid gimmicks, and then they took off those jumpsuits and had jumpsuits on under it, and
yeah.
so they were just doing funny stuff and switching up songs, and so they played all the hits. I mean, like, I'm a big fan of like Pinkerton, which is
sure.
a weird Weezer album that came out after their other one. Not a lot of people liked it. I loved it, and so they played some hits that I knew off of that, and I was really excited. And then I had known that beforehand they had contacted radio stations
mm-hmm.
and asked for anyone who can play an instrument to come to this audition beforehand.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so they had this massive amount of just band geeks.
Kids
and
with clarinets and
oboes
stuff?
Oboes and clarinets and high school band guys and drumline guys. Then they had like the old fat dude that plays the saxophone and like, you know, all these weird guys, a guy with a violin and, you know, all age groups.
Mm.
And they had auditioned them. And I guess whoever showed up to that deal had picked people out and taught them a couple songs.
Right.
And so this last show at Nokia, I went with my good friend Keith Grisham, and he – I don't know if he'd ever seen Weezer live. And I kept telling him all this stuff and beating him down. And he was
yeah.
like, go easy on me, man. So we get in there, and I'm singing along to every song. And then all of a sudden
– Say it ain't so away.
And all of a sudden they called it the Jamboree.
Mm-hmm.
And they get these massive – people.
Did they come from backstage or
yeah.
just out of the stand,
well,
out of the seats?
While we're going into Nokia, all these people had instruments with them.
Yeah.
And I kept going, man, this is weird. You know, I'd forgotten.
And, yeah,
oh, yeah,
yeah
just
yeah.
every instrument you can imagine. Dude with a harmonica and a guy with spoons.
Yeah.
And everything. And so all of a sudden, they had like an intermission. And Cuomo's,
yeah.
he's standing up there and he's like, all right, everybody who's in the Jamboree, please come backstage. And so All these people come piling out, and they are. I have a picture of it. I need to put it on.
A lot of it on YouTube. I've seen.
Yeah, yeah. You can YouTube the Dallas Nokia one. There's a lot of shows they did it at.
That tour. That's right. That's right.
But the Dallas one's great. And so they pull out all the kids and all the instruments, all the dudes, and they're just lined across the stage. And Rivers is in the middle, and he's like the conductor.
Yeah.
And so he kind of goes down the line. He's doing little one-liners and talking to people in the line. You know, he's a real sharp guy. And so he's, you know, the couple witty banter things. And then they fired up with Island in the Sun.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's like hip, hip, doo-doo-doo-doo. And it was so cool because literally you've got – yeah, there's just – there's a saxophone here and a spoon guy here and a harmonica here and a – you know, just everything you can imagine. And it sounded perfect. It was – they had practiced and they're playing behind him. And so he did like an instrumental, and then the band kicked in with him. And they did like three songs like that.
And that's cool. Well, you know, when the live show, when done right, and you get this at Petty and Springsteen and Weezer, obviously, it should feel like a night at summer camp for the audience member. Yeah. That's what it should feel like. You shouldn't feel some big disconnect with some weirdo on the stage.
Yeah.
And that's what happens at a lot of shows. It should feel like, when done right, it feels like a night at summer camp. You know, you're singing along. You're just in communion with everybody there at the show, and everybody's on. You're in a moment with the band. Well, that's cool, man. Weezer.
Oh, that's a great show.
Awesome.
Great show.
Well, I want to approach another topic. You talked about skinny, pudgy Rivers Cuomo, whatever, dorky guy. I've got an odd question. Someone emailed something about referencing the issue. I don't know if it's an issue, but. Kind of in reference to music and also comedians. Whereas, can you be a comedian? Have you seen the Carrot Top commercial where he's just like all roided up and ripped?
Creepy looking.
Dude. Now, how come when you start working out, you're no longer funny? It starts to creep you out. We're going to approach this issue a little bit and many others in our next segment. We'll be right back.
As soft as it is serene, Shelly checked into the motel today to place the do not disturb sign on display. To spoil herself the only way she can, some time away from her home and her man.
Shelly check. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Joining me is our old road manager, Walker, Texas road manager. Blake Walker is here. Talking about the greatest show you ever saw, Weezer, highly among them, recently here at Nokia Theater.
The Jamboree.
Fantastic. A night at summer camp when done right, the live show.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you alluded to something, how you, when you first got turned on to Weezer, they were just these skinny guys and with mustaches and pimpled faces and... The greatest line ever of the podcast was, you know, I was talking about Elton John, the young Elton John being a... you know, pudgy, pimpled face on his early albums, just all insecure looking. And Kurt South said, "Yeah, that's you just described everyone who's ever been in my rhythm section."
he said, "Sexually confused."
Yeah, sexually confused. My point being that not necessarily a prerequisite for good art does not come from the supremely confident. I would say, man, songwriters, comedians, especially stand-up comedians, I would say are the platform of art for the disenfranchised, for the ridiculed, for Rivers Cuomo of Weezer to make his mark on the world. He had to turn to music. He couldn't go to Hollywood, could he?
No.
He couldn't play in the NFL.
No.
Prince, Woody Allen, Jerry Seinfeld, Steven Tyler of Aerosmith, Mick Jagger, skinny Weasley dudes who couldn't get any girls, who couldn't get any dates. So they're funny. and a comedy club.
Self-deprecation.
Self-deprecation is the root of all good comedy.
Absolutely.
You know, the root of good songwriting is a willingness to show your insecurities, reveal your dark side.
Great songwriting.
Great songwriting.
That's the best.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best of what it is.
It's
therefore,
honesty.
I pose my question, pose my question to you, and it's not so much of a physical thing, but there are numerous examples in my corner. I'm going to say, where a musician or a comedian has some success through their funny, self-deprecating, oddball things that they're doing. And all of a sudden you see them, it's a big jump-the-shark, uh-oh moment when they come out on Letterman for their new album, or, hey, he's doing a new show in Vegas, and here he comes, and what's he wearing, Walker? He's got on the tight tee, the ripped abs, and the bulging biceps. Hey, what's up, man? He sits down, and that's when I stand up and wipe my hands. I'm like, I'm off. I'm out on this dude now. And they're like, why are you off him? Just because he's exercising? I'm like, look at him. He's all buff. He's all roided up. I don't know if he's on roids, but he's just all – he's all
– Carrot Top is definitely on roids.
Well, Carrot Top, the recent – what commercial is that for where they're all sitting in the classroom?
It's for Burger King, and it's like the Estrada sunglasses.
Yeah, right.
And,
okay.
And Carrot Top's there too. And
Estrada's funny. Frank Poncherello is making fun of himself over there.
Yeah.
Then it goes to Carrot Top. He's obviously got the sleeveless, huge, ripped up. And I'm just like, dude, that's the end of him. Not that I was ever that into Carrot Top.
No, he was never funny.
He was kind of, you know, early on, ha ha, it's a gag.
Yeah.
It was a bit, right? He had goofy orange hair and he was a skinny guy with freckles.
Yeah.
Now he's all roided up, off. The one that really comes to mind, the big one, was Joe Piscopo.
Yeah.
You might remember early 80s.
SNL.
Saturday Night Live. Oh, man, he did the... I am black and you are white. You are blind as a bat and I have sight. He was Frank Sinatra doing the Eddie Murphy Stevie Wonder. Oh, guy, he did a great Letterman. We put the gap between his teeth, you know, and he did Phil Donahue. I mean, he was hilarious. Piscopo, man.
Yeah.
In the movie Johnny Dangerously. Anyway, Joe Piscopo's fun. Man, but sure enough, shows up on, starts going on daytime TV. And he's just got the bronzed, oiled arms with the veins. He's just like, yeah, I'm Joe Piscopo. He's all amped up. Just, yeah, I'm working out now. I'm still funny, though. I'm funny. He was done. That was it. It was just like, dude, a guy who looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger can't be funny. You know, bodybuilders don't tell jokes.
Right.
And I don't know, man. And I got in an argument with a couple guys in the van a while back. They're like, man, you still be... I'm just like, man, I think it's... There's something to be said for it. There's something for just Woody Allen. He's just so skinny and awkward. Just him being out there is funny. You know, Jerry just comes out, Seinfeld. Just, what is the deal? He's just the everyman in his white sneakers. He's just dorky. But, dude, if he started wearing, like, the Affliction shirts with the douchebag hair, he just wouldn't be, you know, like, yeah, with the faux hawk and just like, what's so what, man? I'm going to a stylist now. Big deal. He kind of had some biceps. You'd be off, Jerry. It's not, you'd be like, I'm done with it.
Yeah,
why
that's
is
the truth
that?
To that?
Is physical nature, is the physical appearance of a songwriter or a, some would argue, Bruce Springsteen, awkward, pimply in his early age, started just getting all buff and ripped, you know, after like Born in the USA. A lot of people would argue, yeah, and he hadn't put out a good record since, you know. Some would argue that, you know, that he's always in the gym now and, you know. What do you have to say about
it's
that?
I think it's a fine line because I think
painting with a broad brush there, but that's what we do on this show.
It's possible to be incredibly funny and be in great shape, but it's almost doesn't exist. I mean, if like I'm a huge fan of Def Comedy Jam, Kings of Comedy.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean the you know like Bernie Mac and
some of the great comedians are coming like Farley. They're overweight. That's part of the gag. Or,
and all those some of the best stand-ups. And it's great because they're 100% open and honest, and it's self-deprecating, and they're making fun of themselves or their family,
exactly,
or their marriage.
And so when they're working out, you think, well, they're trying to get rid of their insecurity. They're trying to look better and feel better about themselves. That's going to hurt their art, man. His whole bit was how he was awkward and he couldn't get any dates. And hey, you know, I mean, I'm over there just, I mean, it's funny. But if he shows up and he's had hair plugs and a facelift and he's just been working out,
Yeah.
And he's doing two or three nights in Vegas. Why are you going to get – I'm kind of like, oh, well, now he's all like, you know.
Try to picture Larry David with a toupee and
there you
and
go.
Just
There's a good
roid
example.
It out.
A good he's, example he's, right there.
It's no longer honesty and self-deprecation because now the reason why you get roided out is because you want people to look at you and go, man, he's in shape. Look at that.
Yeah,
you
know, look, he's all – yeah,
you,
exactly.
You do it because you want people to see you and get attention from that.
And have like, a good impression of you. I mean, yeah. You know, it is. It really is. It's kind of a yeah, you're just not in the gym hearing guys crack funny jokes. Yeah. That guy's hilarious, man.
If Will Ferrell
just doing crunches.
Will Ferrell had a six-pack tomorrow and was really, really in shape, and that was his thing
I
now.
I just to be funny. I don't know what the big deal is. I'm just working out now. I mean, it'd ruin his whole deal. We almost see his flabby gut just streaking on old school. That's funny.
Like, you know, one of the – a recent comic that I bought his stand-up, and it's like live at the Purple Onion. His name's Zach Galifianakis. And
I've heard the name. Yeah, yeah,
he's
yeah.
He's got a beard, yeah. And he's overweight, and he's actually in that new movie, the Vegas one, or the Bachelor Party or whatever.
Oh, The Vegas. Hangover?
The Hangover.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, before that, he was kind of an underground, you know, had some stuff on YouTube, and my wife and I went and saw him in Dallas. Before he was in the, you know, now he's in a bunch of movies, but, the guy is hilarious. Mm-hmm. And all he does is he plays the piano mm-hmm. and, he'll talk and do his monologues and then he'll do his, stand up and he just gets hammered.
Yeah.
And he's constantly making fun of himself.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievably funny. It's so awkward, it's so funny. I mean, he goes into the crowd and just rips himself and it's so intelligent, but it's so wheels off.
Yeah.
And it's funny because he's just out there being 100% open and honest. And if that guy showed up with a six pack and just bulging biceps and was selling a Bowflex,
now that I'm successful, you know, I'm just kind of like,
because you almost have to have a different kind of personality to want to be buff and to want to take steroids.
You have to have
that conceited look at me, I'm huge. You know, you have to be that.
Yeah, I'm not talking about you can't be healthy.
Yeah,
I'm talking like Carrot Top. I'm talking. Like Piscopo, like you're saying, the ripped wearing a sleeveless shirt. Terrible. Yeah, I'm just kind of like, dude, that's just so.
It's not funny.
Comedy. It's not funny.
And
it's
you're taking the attention off your intelligent stand up and saying, you know, look how great and in shape I look.
Yeah, man. And yeah, now look at me now.
Those guys
wouldn't listen to me now.
I can't see any of those guys ever doing that. You know, it's
Like a Steve Martin or somebody. Yeah, he would never just start roiding up and. I mean, he wore rabbit ears and played a banjo in a white suit. I mean, it was just like, you know, and he just thought he was all cool. Just, hey, I'm a neat guy, you know. But he was just, he was nerdy and funny and, you know, trying. All that stuff he did was all based on, you're exactly right, it was just self-deprecating.
Yeah.
He can't get it done, man. Every Woody Allen movie, he just hopelessly pursues women. And he's just this funny-looking guy. And he knows it. And he's just so down on himself all the time, you know. I mean, it just kills me. So yeah, when some dude just says, "So what if I'm working out? I'm in shape now." I'm just kind of like, "Man, I'm off. I'm out."
Yeah, I mean, like I'm sure Seinfeld and Larry David, some of those guys, you know, jog. They stay in shape.
Yeah,
you're never gonna see them wearing a sleeveless shirt. You're never gonna see them wearing a tank top or you know something ridiculous that brings attention to their physique.
Yeah, that's right.
Then it totally would take away from what they're portraying.
That's right.
And I think a genius comic doesn't need any of that stuff. And it's not insecure and it's not want people looking at his biceps.
Right.
It's about his intelligent, you know, stand-up.
Yeah, like Stephen Wright or something. Regardless of what you think of his comedy, his whole shtick is just he's almost just like this. He's just so dour. He's just almost like a homeless guy showing up and started talking into the mic. And, yeah, if you started just saying, man, I'm going to just up my game a little bit. I'm successful. I'm going to start getting all buff. Just get a trainer. And get some hair plugs and shed some pounds. It'll put his fans ill at ease. Like what's going on now?
Hey,
the new me, you know?
I think you can carry some of that over into rock and roll too.
I think so. I think any performer, I mean, you know,
I love, you know, if you look at like Guns N' Roses, okay?
Right.
Those guys were great. You know, some just in your face rock and roll.
Oh yeah.
But you know, shirtless. And, you know, Slash always has his shirt off, a top hat, a cigarette in it, and a guitar.
Right.
And, you know, it's probably more catered to the female audience.
Right.
You know, for me, I'm totally cool with him putting a shirt on. You know, it's like I don't really need, you know, Scott Weiland is always having his shirt off.
Yeah,
showing off his abs, his heroin abs, or whatever
it
is.
Yeah, right.
But it's like, I could do without
his emaciated frame.
I can't stand it when, you know.
But those guys aren't like buffed. I mean, no, they're like scrawny.
But it's still awkward when Mick Jagger wears a shirt that stops at his belly button.
Yeah, and he's 70
still,
years old.
Yeah, it's still it was awkward when he was 16. You know,
yeah,
it's
that's
like,
right.
I understand you're catering to the female audience, but at the same time, like we said earlier, let the music speak for itself. If it's rock and roll, it's rock and roll.
That's right.
You know, you really don't have to, you know, you don't have to be shirtless. You
yeah,
know?
That's right.
It's really not necessary. It's the same kind of deal to me.
What if Keane just got up at that show at a Reed Auditorium just takes off his shirt, you know, but grabs his guitar.
I don't think
playing.
I can take it, man. Oh, that's just it. Because then it,
what if the new Lyle Lovett record, dude? He's just on the cover. He's just like bench pressing. He's just military pressing. Just veins popping out. Just Lyle Lovett's new album getting ripped.
It takes away from everything. I think you no longer let the music speak for itself.
So why do these guys exercise?
I think there's
a great Seinfeld episode where someone goes, one of the guys like, Jerry, you got to go to the gym. You got to go to the gym, Jerry. You got to work out and lift weights. And Jerry looks at him finally and just goes, why? And the guy just freezes and just stares off in his face, just doesn't have an answer.
Yeah.
Jerry's like, why? And the guy just goes, he just didn't have an answer for it. Of course, you like to think we like to be strong, but you're like,
yeah, fit.
I know, but okay, fit. Fit's fine.
Yeah. There's a big difference between fit and I know dudes that have absolutely no life. They work from 8 to 5. They go straight to the gym every night and do today's the lats or tomorrow's the biceps.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's like, dude, their whole life.
It shows a preoccupation with your appearance, with yourself. I mean,
it's creepy.
You could say that, I want to be in good shape. And that, like you say, that's good.
Yeah,
but
fit? Yeah, I'm cool with that.
That's fine.
Hey, 30 minutes, three times a week, you're fit. You know, I get it. But the dude who is constantly at the gym and is Facebooking and MySpace and I'm headed to the gym
and wearing
again.
Wearing the cut shirts.
Today's lats on the 27-mile run.
Which is all fine. I mean, you know, you could do that. It's fine. It just, I do think it starts to butt up against being a stand-up comedian.
Absolutely.
Or being a songwriter.
At some point.
It's just kind of like, man, you know, anybody who was in tune with that part of their personality or something wouldn't spend their time on this other stuff.
No.
So when you see a guy maybe switch from being a good comic or songwriter, and man, now he's just in the gym all the time, and he's just, you know, going out to the clubs, you're just kind of like, he's lost his edge.
I just don't. I've played athletics, and I was really in shape in high school, and I'm fat and pale and married. And,
that's what they all.
You know, I like to stay fit for my wife, and I try to, but it's like I've just never been that. I didn't care that much about what other people think of me.
Yeah.
Wear what you want me to wear, or to look like I'm supposed to look, like I'm coming out of an Abercrombie catalog or something. I just think that doesn't consume my mind. You know.
You just take off your shirt and just sort of seductively lean in the doorway. Your house and just sort of.
It doesn't happen a lot around
my
house. Yeah.
You've got baby vomit on your back of your shirt.
There's a certain level of just, man, how much time are you putting into your appearance and what does it really mean to you?
Oh,
it's just,
man.
It's just not that important to me.
Oh, that's funny, dude. That is so funny. I've tried, you know, in college, I went through a deal where we were kind of all, you know, we got free gym, whatever, you and just Nautilus.
You
know,
you go in there.
Yeah, you go to the rec, just kind of, it's a social deal, but yeah, it's you know, even like running, my wife's a big runner. She's run the New York Marathon, you know, and loves to run. And, man, I just hated running. I just always hated it. I was like, man, as a little kid,
when a coach
or somebody just wanted to stick it to you and punish you, they stopped doing that. I'm going to make you run around the field. You're like, oh, God, no, anything but that.
Uh-huh.
And so that was punishment. They just make you run. And so anytime I had to run, you know, where it could be avoided at all possible, I avoid running, strenuously exerting myself.
It is a beating, dude.
It is. You don't run? You never jogged or anything?
I do now because, you know, I'm getting older and fatter, and my wife's like, you know, you need to work out. And so I work out, and it's like I do the –
She's already telling you that?
Oh, yeah.
God, Blake.
Do I look like I'm chiseled?
You need to lay down on the couch, and you need to get out the notepad. The psychiatrist, the shrink is in.
Well, my wife's in
Phil
great.
Is here.
My wife's in great shape. She eats like a rabbit.
We'll get
she
another mic.
Out.
We'll get another mic for her. We'll have marriage counseling edition. Counseling edition of the P2 podcast.
You know, but I'm more of the three times 30 minutes a week just stay relatively fit to where if I have to run from a mugger or a burning home, I think I can get that covered.
That's right.
But if I got to run a marathon, I'm not your guy. I'm not going to show up and run the marathon. I want to be able to stand for 4 hours and watch a college football game. If I can do that, I'm fit. I'm okay. You know, it's like I don't need to run the marathon to prove to myself that I can do it. It's just not that important.
Do they still have physical fitness at elementary schools, don't they?
I think so.
I should know this. I think they do that.
Yeah, you should know that.
Kids do that. Yeah, they do. Boy, I remember doing it in middle school, in elementary school. You run the 40-yard dash, which I loved. I had some good speed as a kid. I'd run with the shoes off, you know, time me in the 40, timing the 40. Then you have the dreaded 600 or something around the field. And then the ultra dreaded hanging on the bar with your chin on the bar.
Yeah, you had to hang.
And you couldn't rest your chin on the bar. Now, I hear they can do them underhanded. We had to do overhanded.
Overhand's hard.
Overhand's hard. So we had to do overhanded. God, that was so hard to get up there.
We had to do sit-ups and something else, and they count them, like so many in a minute, so many in 30 seconds,
right.
All that
we
junk.
We did that. But, dude, that bar was tough because your whole class is gathered around. Your third or fourth grade, all the girls you like. You get up there, and you don't want to look like you're straining.
No.
But, good grief, you can't. I mean, I couldn't stay up there for more than maybe 10, 15
That's
seconds.
That's a brutal
and so it always just like the weird kid that never talked. He could just sit there and just hang for like 2 minutes.
The weird kid never moved, you know what I mean?
Like the most unathletic. He would just sit there and just motionlessly just sit there and hang. Just, you know, little George, you know, just up there, just, you know, just his glasses just never moves. I'm just like, oh my gosh. Like the smallest kid in the class. The rest of us are all just like
straining.
Arms shaking. Yeah, yeah.
That was always
trying to show
one.
Off for the girls. Oh man, just dropping to the ground, ashamed after like 8 seconds.
Yeah.
That's when I figured out I wanted to be a songwriter.
Where
am I going to take this skinny frame? What can I do with it? You know?
Yeah, there's a certain level of fit you have to be to do rock and roll and be an artist.
Yeah, there
and you
is,
want to
there
be appealing.
Yeah.
You want to look somewhat attractive, at least dress halfway, you know, normal.
I'll tell you what.
Or outlandish but cool.
Man, if you travel like we travel, man, you really don't eat a lot. You're very – we carry a lot of gear. We run around on stage and stuff. Yeah. And sweat it out. It's really pretty active. A lot of people, I'm not trying to say it's like a bodybuilding kind of – but everyone's like, man, you're so skinny all the time. And, you know, I mean, I weigh the same as I did in college pretty much.
I remember,
a little more. But, you know, my friends, a lot of them have really gotten big because they're – you know, they're sitting at a desk all day. I go, dude, you sit at a desk. You sit all day on your computer. You eat donuts and Danish in the – complimentary coffee. Then for lunch, then you just think about all day where you're gonna go for lunch. We're gonna go get Mex. We're gonna go get ribs. Like you have a gigantic lunch.
Yep.
You come back, sit at your desk, just pretend to work. Let it sit. Then at 5, you go home and eat a chicken fried steak. I'm like, dude, I just don't eat like that. I eat a crust of bread. I have 4 cups of coffee. I eat a peanut butter sandwich, and then for dinner I have a bowl of pasta.
Yeah.
And a beer. I said that's about my day of food.
I remember you guys, I mean, you all, that's the rule. You wear jeans and boots to every gig. And you usually have a jean jacket on top of a dress shirt or a shirt.
Very simple.
So it's, I remember watching Stolle, you know, play a 2-hour set, and he's just, every pore is just, there's sweat coming down.
The drums
shirt soaked.
Yeah.
And he's just playing his heart out. He's got the towel around him. And I mean, he's just covered in sweat every show.
Oh, Stu. Yeah. No one sweats like Stu, man.
Oh, yeah.
He really sweats. And he's a much bigger guy than Stolle. Not much, but, you know, he's a big dude, man.
Yeah.
And plays hard. And it's hot, man. The drums is hard on you.
Hey, you get a workout every night.
You do.
Especially you. You're all over the stage, and you're going back and forth, and you're always, you know, jumping up and down. And so you sweat constantly, and you always, like I said, you always got, you know, jeans, boots, whatever else. I mean, you're going to sweat every night. You're going to sweat it off.
My big secret, too, is when I come in off the road or come in from a day of work, I do this every night. I lay down face down on my stomach on the floor of my den. And depending on my level of discomfort, you know, I've got 4 kids. my 12-year-old, 9-year-old, 4-year-old, or 1-year-old to walk on my back.
Nice.
You know, if I can, you know, I've been mixing all day. Maybe get that little
kink,
that little kink in the middle. You know, I'll just get like, well, I don't want too much pressure. So I don't want my oldest. I said, maybe one of the younger kids just lay down there. Say, hey, get a little walk on the back. Boy, they start those little feet down on the bottom of my spine. Just work it up. You know, I can just hear my back popping. Just work it out. Oh. It keeps me going, man.
Secret to Phil.
Oh, it's a secret of my life.
That's
secret
awesome.
Of my life. Eat like a bird. Let your kids walk on your back. Keep you loosened up, man. Keeps me going. Well, yeah, those long van drives. I'll come in. I mean, we'll drive home from Corpus. I mean, you've been sitting there for like 8 hours. Your back's a little stiff, maybe. You know? And so lay down. Man, kids, take off the shoes. Just kind of walk on dad's back. Oh, just work it out. Oh, it's so good.
And the diet is key to rock and roll as well, because I've heard this many times. You shun the bass player or the drummer from eating the chili cheeseburger or the, you know, greasy whatever, because you're going to be on stage for, you know, some shows a 2-hour set.
Yeah.
So it's like you can't eat stuff that's going to disagree with you. You can't eat stuff that's going to make you sluggish.
Oh.
So you guys would eat like a wheat, you know, ham sandwich and a couple of baked Lays, you know, and a Diet Coke and be ready for the show.
Oh, dude, I've seen many, many new guys come into the band, guys subbing in some kid. We go to eat. Yeah, I just get like a dry turkey sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
And an apple. And a glass of water. And this kid goes, I'm hungry, man. He's just like the Buffalo Wild Wings. Like I'm just like, dude, what are you doing?
Me and Jordan were like that. We just eat the chili cheeseburger.
Eat the chili cheeseburger. Then you got to go play a show. And you're up there. Oh, just be wrong all show. That's a whole topic for another show.
Yeah.
The getting wrong show.
Well, what you eat will make you sluggish. I mean, you can't be out there playing music and jumping up and down doing your thing for 2 hours straight.
Sluggish.
If you just killed the wing challenge at Buffalo Wild Wings, that ain't going to work.
A lot of times if you eat like that, then you're singing. You're really exerting a lot. And you end up with those kind of those wet, gurgling verps, you know, where you just kind of throw up
no
a little
good.
Bit in your mouth.
Yeah, that's no good. So what did you say? You said,
wait, you're sitting there, you know, you're jumping around. I mean, you know,
yeah.
It's like anything else. You know, you're working the show and you start jumping around, singing, exerting yourself. You don't want to barf on the people in the front row.
So you said your three keys were eat like a bird, have your children walk on your back, and crap like a pet coon. What were they?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Those three. Drink coffee. Drink a lot of coffee in the morning. And eat like a bird, kids walk on your back. Man, you'll be lean and loose. Loose and lean, baby.
We'll scratch crap like a pet kid.
That's right. Well, Blake Walker has been here. We're going to get into the vault. What record were we going to do before we did Phil Pritchett? We were talking about maybe doing
we're
what
talking
else?
About doing one of the newer ones, the either High Tide or the Bullfighter. Or did you want to do one of the records?
I thought there was another one we were going to do, man, maybe. How about Zeppelin, man? You're looking at those Zeppelin records.
Sure.
Let's do Zeppelin 2, man. I've been wanting to do that one.
Let's dance.
Getting the lead out the vault next.
You need cool air, baby. I'm not fooling. I'm gonna sit back in school, way down inside. Honey, you need it. I'm gonna give you my love. I'm gonna give you my love. Oh, want a whole lot of love. 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 You've been learning. Maybe I've been learning. Oh, that's a good time, baby, baby. I've been the dirt better. Way, way down inside. Oh, honey, you need a. I'm gonna give you my love. I'm gonna give you my love. Oh, oh, a whole lot of love.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, joined by my good friend and former road manager and Pritchett enthusiast, a lover of all music, Blake Walker is here. Walker, Texas road manager. How you holding up, man?
I am holding up well.
Thanks for getting on that carrot top and working out steroid talk. When the muscles show up, man, the art goes away.
True.
If Picasso had ever started working out, just bench press, man, he's supposed to be painting, man. He's in there just doing curls all day. Looking at himself in the mirror.
Yeah.
You know, shaving the back of his arms. You'd just be like, dude, come on. Huh. But it might have been the end of him.
Don't take steroids and write your monologue or your stand-up at the same time.
That's right.
Work.
Well, man, here in the vault, Walker grows up in a great household.
Strict Southern Baptist.
He and his brother, let me just say, he's got a fantastic family. His father, who is a veterinarian, Texas A&M, great.
Whoop.
Good. Whoop. Mother, devoted mother, all of his brothers who are all big P2 fans. We love them all. But, you know, as you were talking about, you joke sometimes about your somewhat sheltered upbringing. You're listening to Marty Robbins, and the only movies you watched were like John Wayne.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you didn't watch The Godfather or Star Wars or... something like that. You know,
not until I was much older.
Much older, but yeah, as a young man, it was just, you know, Red River and
Leave it to Beaver and John Wayne.
That's right.
Church on Sunday, and you know,
you're so young to have grown up in 1956.
My parents still watch Nick at Night every night, and that's just the way they are.
Just laugh hysterically. Yeah, at, like,
they're
Hazel.
They're old school, man. Yeah, they still live in the '50s. That's how they want life to be. And hey, you know, it works for them.
Then I'm guessing, growing up, you never woke up on a Christmas morning and unwrapped a copy of Led Zeppelin 2 cassette.
No. No, I didn't hear Led Zeppelin 2 till I was 18 years old in a party in
just
College Station.
Any Zeppelin at all?
I didn't even know who they were. I mean,
is that,
to be honest.
Are you kidding?
I saw, my only recollection of what Zeppelin was or is or could have been, when I was in high school, there's the clique that was the major druggies that had the long hair.
Just
and one of them always had a Zeppelin shirt on. And I used to always kind of thought, you know, like it what is that? Like, they've got to be a rock and roll band, you know, but I had no clue because I listened to the radio and, you know, and in high school it was like Texas country, and I got to college and I had these, you know, these fraternity brothers that were, you know, the druggy guys that were into the hippie music.
Yeah.
That was my dad called it, you know, you had to burn your draft card. My dad's recollection of that era is you had to burn your draft card and be a communist to enjoy Led Zeppelin. For me, I didn't know what it was. And then when I started hearing it, I mean, like we were just kind of rapping earlier, and it feels like save it for the podcast.
Save
you know,
the podcast.
I can't fathom a band that influenced so many people. You can't be in a rock and roll band today and not pull something from what Zeppelin influenced someone else or Zeppelin themselves. And so I asked Phil, I said, well, what's Zeppelin's influence, you know? And he's like, well, the blues, man. I'm like, well, you know, the blues are okay, but the blues don't sound anything like Zeppelin. They took the blues and put it on steroids and drugged it out and made it the most amazing. They defined what rock and roll is
today. If the music's
today.
On steroids, that's good. As long as the artist himself is on steroids.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we've
but
established
what
that.
What they did with it, you can't take another band and go, okay, these guys are before their time. Beatles and some other people, but Zeppelin is one of those bands before their time. They could be popular right now. If Led Zeppelin 2 came out
sound
it'd be popular.
Better. You know, the thing about Zeppelin, I was kind of like you. I grew up in a shelter. I mean, we didn't have just Zeppelin. But our next-door neighbor was sort of he was like maybe 13 and I was like 8, you know, and he would like, you know, take his Star Wars action figures and like you know, string him up in a tree, doused in like lighter fluid, and light him on fire. He's that kind of
that
guy.
Kid?
Yeah, he'd shoot a squirrel and like skin it, you know, and run around with the heart, you know. And just,
you're not mad at me. You're mad at your dad.
That's right.
He's that guy.
He was that kind of guy, dude. He would just sit there, like sharpening. He made like homemade knives and stuff.
God.
Sitting there sharpening homemade knives, man. And just Zeppelin be playing like Cashmere. But I was listening to that music, just going, dude, what is this? It's just like. It's just da, 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 da. But that's on Physical Graffiti, of course. But Zeppelin 2, recently I borrowed some vinyl records from Stu. Had them. I mean, I've had all Zeppelin in every form my whole life. And I got Zeppelin 1, 2, and 3. And I said, man, I want to fly them into the computer so I can put them on my iPod. And I confess, I tend to forget what songs are on what album, you know. And man, I was just shocked at 2. And I just go, man, this is just almost the greatest hits of Led Zeppelin. I mean, of course, there are records are everywhere, but just Moby Dick, Whole Lot of Love.
What are the other ones on here?
But you could argue, could
Lemon Song, Heartbreaker, Living Love
and
Made.
Could be the greatest rock record of all time. I mean,
it's one for sure. I mean, if there is one Zeppelin that you have to pick, a lot of people say Physical Graffiti because it's a double album and it's bigger. But dude, the riffs on Zeppelin 2. You know, Whole Lot of Love. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Then you got Moby Dick. Yeah, even those smaller ones. You know, Bring It On Home, Ramble On.
Oh man, if you hear those, you hear any of those songs, they never get old. I mean, it's one of the few rock and roll acts that like you can't be overplayed.
No,
it's that good.
Right. It's good.
It's crazy.
You know what's funny? At the time, now I wasn't around. In their heyday, and they broke up in 1980, well before I even got into anything, or was old enough. But evidently, as the legend goes, really the critics were very hard on Led Zeppelin. They said, "Man, they're kind of sloppy." And the myth I always heard was that Pete Townshend of the Who, Jimmy Page said, "Hey, I'm putting together this heavy blues band or something," and he heard it, and Pete Townshend said, "Man, this thing's going to go over like a lead balloon," and that's how they named it Led Zeppelin. Now that's Maybe that's a myth. Email me if that's a myth. That was a story I always heard. But so they knew Led Zeppelin kind of as a joke. Man, they just had – the guys in that band were such – we always talk about the 10,000 hours, Malcolm Gladwell. You have to study. You have to – like the Who. Pete Townsend was such a great songwriter and a great guitar player. The bass player, John Entwistle, was an amazing bass player. Keith Moon was just a very – he was a crazy drummer. He was very unique. And Zeppelin was the same way. Each of those guys was just such an aficionado at their instrument. Plant was a great singer. But more impressively was Page on guitar. He had all those riffs, man. He had all those ideas.
Was he the first guy to play the double guitar?
The double neck?
Yeah, who did?
Man, he made it famous. That was the Gibson double neck.
What a crazy
stairway with the 12 string and the
nuts.
I mean, but they could just the dynamics of it. I think when I was flying all these albums into my iPod, do you think it's Zeppelin just kicking ass? It's, man, how many great slow stuff. Just, and if I say to you tomorrow, or at least songs that start slow, Ramble On and Tangerine, and, man, incredible dynamic in those albums. Kind of slow acoustic, you know, things, coupled with the just the bludgeoning rock and roll that we all love. But today's generation thinks of Zeppelin just, man, kicking ass, and they certainly are, but... It's really surprising to go back and know how many of the slow, soft little 12-string Jimmy Page deals you know, the Battle of Evermore and stuff like that are just beautiful, you know, and very mind-blowing, all the same as the rockin' stuff. Page was just kind of the heart and soul of the band, the guitar player, of course. He'd been with the Yardbirds, we all know. And was really a star, like, at a very young age, even as a teenager, was playing guitar on, like, I think like British talk shows, like little blues guitars and stuff. And he'd been in the Yardbirds, and I remember seeing an interview with Robert Plant. By the time he met Jimmy, man, everybody kind of knew who Jimmy was. He was already kind of somebody. And he was starting this new band, and, you know, the legend is out there. But, man, Zeppelin, if I don't think there is a Led. Is there a Led Zeppelin's greatest hits? There might be.
I don't think so.
See, they didn't really have singles, you know what I mean? They were just around for album rock. You listen to all the songs, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, there weren't like a singles band, to be sure. The songs are Stairway. And
you can, I know.
They're long.
There's a box, you know.
Oh, there's
collection.
Box sets.
Yeah, you get the box
are.
Set, but I've never
and
seen
another
it.
Great Zeppelin deal, man, is a How the West Was Won, which came out a few years ago. It's a three-disc set. Three discs or two? I guess three discs from like the 74 tour. Kind of at their peak. If you've ever seen the movie The Song Remains the Same, live Zeppelin deal. There's a lot of weird like acting scenes in there, just Robert Plant at Stonehenge or something. I hadn't seen it in a long time, but kind of weird, and coupled with the live footage, and they do Moby Dick, and the long ones that I don't really care for as much. Stairway is kind of long and a little sloppy. But, I mean, How the West Was Won, they're doing, like, Dancing Days, they're doing The Ocean. Those great riffs. They were doing that kind of stuff, Houses of the Holy album. And, man, they are mighty, dude. They are. It is rocking. It is freaking rocking. So How the West Was Won. But, man, Zeppelin 2. Just almost the greatest hits of Zeppelin, dude.
Have
you
think...
found yourself digging around on Zeppelin later on? I mean, once you kind of, I mean, you a fan of them?
Yeah, after I had a fraternity brother, Jason Easterly, who was just so into them. He could talk about Zeppelin for days.
Yeah.
And he explained a song.
The great
to me.
Book, Hammer of the Gods, a Zeppelin road book, you know.
He explained a song to me. We listened to it together, and he explained it as an orgasm. Like,
yeah.
It starts out slow, and then it gets to the
That's
point
right.
where it's
oh,
like
yeah.
this. And he was so in love with Zeppelin, and it creeped me out at first, but then I began to understand what he was talking about.
Yeah.
And understand that at that point in time, no one had ever done that. And anyone after that has to take it from them.
That's right.
So it was so unique because they came up with it. And so I got into him my freshman year of college in 99, and I bought a bunch of stuff and loved it. And now when I hear it, it never gets old to me.
Right.
But it still just boggles my mind how everyone had to pull from them in rock and roll
yeah.
from there on out because they defined what it was. They put the stamp on this is rock and roll. And it's like
yeah.
it's hard to take another
Especially
band and
heavy,
say,
that heavy, heavier side of it, man, just Led Zeppelin. You're right. They're just the ubiquitous band, you know, just that anyone's going to like.
Ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous. There it is. There's a word for the day. You know, I mean, I'm such a big Beatles fan, a huge Beatles fan. The influence of the Beatles is unbelievable. Of course. They're ubiquitous as well. But, man, I would even say, since like the 80s through now, the Beatles, I think their influence in modern music, for worse, maybe, is less obvious. There's yeah. not a lot of dual, parallel harmony singing, intricate little chord deals and things like that. And I would say maybe Zeppelin is maybe the most influential rock band. A lot of people would immediately say the Beatles or the Stones. But, you look around at like what still does well in stadiums. I mean, these bands like Iron Maiden and the Scorpions.
Metallica.
I mean, quit thinking about, you know. Like, well, they still tour Europe, man, for huge crowds, man. And they have much more in common with Zeppelin than they do the Beatles.
Zeppelin's way more hard rock and roll. When you think of what rock
but
and roll is.
People love Guns N' Roses. They love AC/DC. Man, those guys age well. Mm-hmm. If they can stay out there and stay alive and keep touring. Whereas maybe U2, maybe more of a Beatles band.
More of a pop. Yeah.
Pop with a little more singy and songwriting. Yeah. They're going to kind of do a little Sgt. Pepper with little lasers on our jackets or whatever they're going to do.
Because the Beatles
on this tour.
Did have more cheesy, almost you'd call it radio play stuff.
Broadway,
you know,
vaudevillian
like Love Me
kind
Do
of stuff.
And stuff like that.
Right.
Zeppelin
right.
wasn't like that, you know?
Hey, man, anybody from a folky in a coffee house to just the biggest metalhead, it's going, what do you think of Zeppelin? They're going to go, oh, dude, they're badass. Dude,
yeah.
Everyone loves Zeppelin.
Right.
There's not a whole lot of bands. You can say that about. I mean, everyone's going to have a strong opinion on the Beatles or the Stones or all the other big guys, you know, whoever, Dylan, all those old dudes. But Led Zeppelin, man, and it, listen to those albums. I was flying them in. It's amazing just the drums and the bass, and how good it still sounds, man. Those guitar tones. They're noted for recording they were very much in control of their own careers. They would literally call like a arena and say, "We want to have a concert." On this date, and they'd get it. They didn't work with promoters. They didn't work with labels. They recorded these albums. Atlantic Records put them out. But they had Swan Song, had their own label, which was way ahead of its time for a band to have that much control over what they were producing.
Ahead of the time is like the definition.
I mean, they produced themselves. Yeah. I mean, they're all produced by Jimmy Page and Led Zeppelin or Jimmy Page. They didn't bring in some hotshot guy. Oh, we got to get on the radio. We'll do a duet with Neil Diamond. He's pretty hot. You know, they just sequestered themselves in a castle with a bunch of Jack Daniels and just kicked out the freaking jams.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the legend of it is so huge. You're just like, gosh, man, when you make an album, and I've said it before on the podcast, it's so astounding, those guitar riffs. There's so many. Every band now is just starts with just a chug, 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 or strumming a chord. They never go. They never start off with something like that.
Yeah.
A signature lick.
It's so unique.
No one does that these days. No one even tries to do it.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's just already all been done or.
That's the thing. It's like it defines rock and roll. It's a snapshot in history and it is what it is.
Yeah.
There'll never be anything like it because they've influenced everyone after them.
That's right.
You're just not going to see that. It's just a snapshot in time that makes it so unique and so, you know, it just defines rock and roll. Mm-hmm.
And like all the great bands, you know, like the Beatles or the Zeppelin, man, together about 10 years. You know, they're not still out there. Very famously, they were going to go back on tour recently when they did this birthday party for Atlantic Records after Ahmet Erdogan, the founder of Atlantic Records, died. They did one concert. They did a kind of a jam at the place in London. What's it called? Anyway, but John Paul Jones, Jimmy Page, and Robert Plant. And John Bonham, the drummer's son, Jason Bonham, played drums. And
how did his dad die?
He choked on his own vomit.
Yikes. Yeah, what year?
So. 80, I think.
Okay.
John Bonham, yeah. I think choked on some vomit. I think that's right.
Hopefully it wasn't someone else's vomit.
So he can't dust for vomit. So very sad. But lost Bonham. And as a tribute to John Bonham, they broke up and they never toured since, and still haven't. And I think that really makes their legacy endure more.
Yeah, you don't like tarnish it if they went on tour.
I love the Police, but I love that the Police were broken up. Yeah. And we're decked. I mean, they did this reunion deal. And, you know, I'm sure it was great. I'm sure they sounded awesome. They looked awesome. Everybody loved the show. It was $300. And now I'm off the Police, man. It's not cool for me to listen to my Police records. I'm like, I don't know. It will be again one day. But
the legend will stay the same if they don't get back together and start touring.
It's like Guns N' Roses. They disbanded not a long time after Appetite for Destruction. And you just let that album just stay out there.
Yeah.
Appetite. Don't try to remake it. This Chinese Democracy thing. It threatened to ruin the whole thing.
If
they were smart, they wouldn't even put that thing out.
Just release another greatest hits.
Yeah. And just get the old band back together and tour and play Appetite.
Yeah.
At the Cotton Bowl. You know?
Yeah.
That's what I'd do. But no one asked me. Axel, call if you need me. Thank you, Blake Walker, for being here. Talking the dangers of working out for your art.
Yeah.
And Led Zeppelin.
Fit.
All in the same breath. Jimmy Page wasn't working out. He was maybe lifting that Jack Daniels bottle or whatever he was doing. And, practicing black magic or whatever all that.
Yikes.
All the myth was. Very mysterious. The Zeppelin, no one really knows what was going on. That made it so cool because they weren't in some studio. They were just out in the countryside. They're very, very secretive, and no one knew how those albums got made or the songs got written or how they made the drums sound like that. They've talked about it in interviews later, but there was a process there that we all weren't privy to, and that makes everything all the more mysterious. And these album covers, you didn't know who was in Zeppelin or... Unlike MTV, where we're just so beaten down with the images of the same bands.
Yeah.
You know, you go see him live, you're like, yeah, there he is. You know, Zeppelin, you go to a concert, there's just a blimp on the cover. You didn't even know what they looked like. They came walking out and started playing. You're like, oh.
That's cool.
There was so much intrigue. You would just stare at those album covers and, who's that guy? And what's he doing there? And who are all these other people? And, you know, there was just, you look on the back, they don't even list the songs. There's just a couple weird pictures in Zeppelin 2. And the rest... I think that's a big part of it. The rest is just for you to make it for yourself, imagine. Zeppelin. Start with Zeppelin 2 if you need to get started. From there, call me, and we'll work forward from that. Thank you, Blake Walker, for being here. This is Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast. Get all your Pritchett music at philpritchett.com or on iTunes. Call me, 817-733-5256. Did you know the full band will just drive to your house with a couple speakers in the car, jump out and just play a show in your backyard.
You've had it happen many times. Oh, yeah.
People think like, oh, Phil, man, look, we play for the fans, wherever that may be.
Oh, yeah.
You live in Colorado or Detroit, Michigan or Miami, Florida. Pritchett, what'd it take? You guys roll up, get out here in my backyard, kick out the jams for 2 hours. I'm going to have all my friends there. Dude, we do it. This is what we do. It's what we do best, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Playing some bar and starting at midnight and all that. That can get old for everybody a little bit. We love doing it, of course. But we do love going to where you are and kicking it out. Call me. Well, thanks for being here, Blake. Until next week on the podcast, all you fans out there, Romans and countrymen, take care. We'll see you soon.
And if I say to you tomorrow... Take my hand, child, come with me. It's to a castle I will take you. Where what's to be, they say, will be. And if the wind sees been sail away, leave the day way high in the sky. And warm, but the wind won't blow. We really shouldn't go. Going up the shore. Say to me tomorrow, oh, what fun it all would be. Then what's to stop us, pretty baby? But what is and what should never be? I catch the wind, see the wind, sail away, leave the day away. Thank you.
Happiness is what you need so bad. Get out!